calculations. That's, this is when, this is the exact wrong thing. During session. This is when they speed up points because you can go right into some kind of. So I don't know, but I think it might be real quick. How are you? Good to see you.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Is that new?
Yes.
Special edition thing.
Whenever you're ready.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Who has control of this? Okay, thank you very much. Some of you know me, some of you don't. My name is Stephen Adams. I work now for Specialized Public Finance, Inc. Our company was formed on November the 6th out of some of the things that have gone on in the financial market. Well, let me introduce my colleagues, Jennifer Douglas, right here, and assuming that we're working with you, she would be my right-hand person. Might not see her at the board scene, but she'd be responsible for knowing everything that goes on with this engagement. Jeff Garland is a technical analyst. He runs a lot of numbers. In fact, he has in the past on all of the more difficult numerical analysis school grads who have done all of those calculations. He went to the University of Texas and he made 1B. And he has the distinction of being from the family that Garland Bend, the Brazos Observatory, was named after. He has a distant relative that worked here years past. Dan Wegmiller, managing director with our firm. His role in this engagement would be more of a sounding board rather than a day-to-day partner. He's got a lot of experience, and when the issues that Brazos Observatory has are often complex, they're new, they're things that people haven't seen before. Introduce him as somebody to help and consult with, and he has done that in the past. What I want to do now is I'm going to turn it over to Dan. He's going to talk a little bit about the company that we formed. And then, time permitting, we'll let Jeff and Jennifer say a few things. And I'm going to wrap up talking about the Brazos River Authority. We would invite you guys to ask questions as we go along. We're free to that. Let's have an open dialogue. And, Dan?
Great. Thanks, Stephen. And thanks again for the opportunity to come here and address you all. On page two is a brief summary of kind of where our firm grew out of, what it grew out of. As Stephen mentioned, as the first bullet point notes, we formed on November 6, 2008, really as a response to the events in the global credit markets. Four of us began, Stephen and I, Vince Biel from our Lubbock office, and Gary Kimball in our Austin office, started discussing and really evaluating how we do business probably about a year ago. And as things unfolded in the global credit markets, I think everyone who was part of an investment banking firm really stepped back and was in the process of looking at how they do business. And we were no different. And we felt like if we didn't do that, we might be falling well behind the curve. So through various times of just talking about, you know, the way we deliver business, we hit on an idea of starting our own firm. And the second and third bullet points note that the independent firm concept, where we didn't align ourselves with a broker-dealer, was very intentional. The idea that we had in this process is of being independent from a broker-dealer was that we could dedicate 100% of our time and resources to just doing the financial advisory role for clients. As it notes in the third bullet point, our firm is made up of 98 years of experience among the six professionals. The managing director levels, we range from 16 to 23 years of providing advisory services. At the director level with Jeff and Jennifer, over 10 years each in the advisory capacity. The fourth bullet point notes our experience as a group. These individuals have led and participated in the number of transactions that would rank us third in the state for the period defined here ending June 30, 2008 for a 12-month period. So we've got a slide that kind of goes into a little more detail on that, but I think it's important to note that there is experience here, there is an understanding of the market, and really a desire to step out beyond what we traditionally have been doing to focus in on the advisory side and advisory role. Moving to the third page, again, I'm just going to hit on some of the high points that I think are worth noting here, is, again, our focus. As a trusted advisor, we wanted to drill down to what we wanted to do and what we saw the need each and every day, growing more and more. Clients used to, you know, maybe call us once every quarter, once every 6 months, begin to call more and more often because of the credit events really are, you know, something that you see and react to every day. And so we thought that dovetailed quite well with an independent FA approach. But being independent doesn't mean we're not registered. We are registered with the State Securities Board. Through that registration, we're also a certain MSRB or Municipal Securities Rulemaking Board rules apply to us. So the state has done its part in making sure independent FAs have that registration and also have a tie-in to certain applicable MSRB rules. Again, the rest of that page really, you know, notes that we do have experience in doing FA work. Yes, sir.
You did say you had one of your questions along the way.
Yes, sir.
I'm a little intrigued with your opening statement here.
Yeah.
Most of the firms you talk to will stress that having an underwriter desk is critical because they know what the market is. However, you're saying that is the very reason that y'all went independent, to avoid having underwriter desk.
That's right.
Could you elaborate on that just a little bit, why that is an advantage as opposed to all that?
Absolutely. There's not one perfect way to do business, obviously. Our approach is that a firm that has a broker-dealer, they're in touch with trades and market information that their firm is doing. What we're focusing on is not just, you know, our firm's perspective, but we have a dialogue and we're staying in touch with the broker-dealer community across the board. We get numerous economic reports and updates. Trade information is available from the Municipal Advisory Council. We access Bloomberg. We see all the sale activity that's going on a day-to-day basis. So a firm with a broker-dealer, that's information that's available to them, but that's one firm's perspective on the market. What we decided to do was step back, and we have access to, you know, all the various firm information through the various resources out there.
Well, I'd like to add a couple of things. First of all, in the nation, 7 out of the top 10 financial advisory firms are like us, not broker dealers. The other thing, the way information is now, I currently have my BlackBerry set up so that whenever a Brazos River forward and bond trades, I get that trade emailed to me. So I can tell you exactly what your bonds are trading, and I'll tell you the last water supply system bond that traded for you was December 28, 2008, so they don't trade a lot. The pollution control bonds trade fine, but they're a lot larger bonds. So the information is out there and available, particularly with today's technology.
And it's also through the underwriting. If you do a negotiated sale, you have underwriters that come to you, and part of our job is to work with those broker-dealers to make sure their current, you know, information that's coming to you, coming to us, is current, and keep them accountable for what they're doing. So we've got all the resources available that anyone does.
Thank you.
You bet.
Can I also add to what Dan was saying, that we've priced several deals since November 6th. And a couple of them will be priced competitively. In fact, I think the lowest number of bids that we received was 10 bids. So the underwriting community has embraced us so far. And is sending us information on their trades as well. And the spreads on those deals that priced were anywhere from 50 basis points to 75 basis points for high bid and the low bid. And so really by kind of stepping away from an underwriter, what we're looking at is the whole market, not relying on the bidder that may have been the high bid back there.
I think it's interesting. One of the sales we had was for a AA credit. We had 10 bids, and the bids, the spread between the winning bid and the high bid was 140 basis points. So, you know, having one broker-dealer and having that view gives you information, but it may not be the most aggressive or current information that's available. Page four is just noting the graph as we put out there, and we put this in there to just highlight that we do have experience within our group. It was a tough decision to do what we did in the economic climate that we were in, no doubt about that. But we are very pleased to have done it. We think it's a great course for our clients, for us professionally, and personally as well. So with that, I'll turn it over to Jeff Garland to take you from here.
Thanks. Dan and Stephen hit most of the high points here, so I won't just go spend too much time, but I think what we bring as an independent is the ability to source ideas from anyone. We're not tied to a specific product or a specific view on the market from one desk. We are able to pull the underwriters on a daily basis, and they'll talk to us freely because they don't view us as a direct competition because we're not out in the market trading against them. So we do have that broad spectrum of places to pull information. Bloomberg, Thompson Municipal Market Monitor, Bond Buyer, the MAC, these are all the same tools that any underwriting desk is going to have access to. This is information that we get, and like Stephen said, even we'll come to his BlackBerry instantaneously. In addition, you know, because they don't view us as the direct competition trading against them, we can get daily market updates from all the economists, Wall Street firms, regional firms, banks. So it's not like we're out there without the knowledge of the market, even though we don't have that desk. We feel it gives us a broader viewpoint and one that you know, gives us complete freedom to bring you ideas without having to worry about the source of that idea. With that, I'll turn it over to Jennifer.
Slide six here on the next page. Just to give you a little bit of information on our experience with rating agencies. Again, even though we are a new firm, since our inception on November 6th, we've actually received upgrades for five of our clients in the public markets. It lists them here who the clients were. As you can see, all the upgrades are from S&P in this case, and I know that you all got an upgrade from S&P last year as well on your water supply system. But just to point out, Brian ISD had also received an upgrade, not Brian ISD, Brenham, had received an upgrade last year from S&P and then received another one last month as well. So it may be that even though you received one recently, there may be another possibility, certainly not anything to rule out. And the reason why all these are from S&P here is because we do keep in touch with the rating agencies, as you probably know. Moody's and Fitch are talking about going through a global rating scale, but until they move forward with that plan, they have kind of what really amounts to a hold on rating upgrades. So in some cases, we're looking case by case, obviously, issuer by issuer. But in some cases, because you have a split rating, for instance, between Moody's and S&P, Moody's is lower than your S&P rating, it might make sense to just go with standalone S&P rating, or in some cases, at Fitch, if they may come in at a higher rating than where Moody's is. Because what we're seeing in this market is that you're trading for lower rating of two ratings. So it's something that we keep our eye on. We'll keep our eye on it, and when the changes start to come out of Moody's, obviously we'll keep on top of those as well. And just to point out, Dan and I actually, you know, we kind of view the rating agency process as a year-long process, not just when it comes time to issue bonds in the market. In fact, actually we made a trip last Friday with some of our clients up to Dallas to have a proactive meeting with all three rating agencies. Again, they do have offices. Two of them have offices in Dallas, one in Austin. But just to make that trip to touch base and say, you know, we're not issuing at this time, but we'd like to go ahead and give you the information. So when it does come time to issue, they are familiar with the clients, not just in a bond scenario, or pressuring them for an upgrade.
I think one thing to note on the ratings, the Hays County one, we had ratings of AA3 from Moody's and AA from S&P. We actually didn't go out with a Moody's rating on that issue because Moody's had downgraded FSA. And in talking to the underwriting community, we got the feedback that four out of the potential bidders really would view the ability to have a pure AAA from just S&P better than having the AA3 on the transaction. So by going out and talking to the community, underwriting community beforehand, we made that determination and we wound up with 10 bids, going with just an S&P rating on that one issue. And we'll evaluate that issue by issue.
Next slide. Well, one thing we want to talk a little bit about is financial markets as it relates directly to the Verizon Service Authority. And the one thing that the Verizon Service Authority often has to do is sell bonds that are AMT bonds. These bonds are tax exempt, but they're not tax exempt to people that are subject to the alternative minimum tax. And we just went through a process, as you know, through the board. We were moving ahead to get some of the state allocation. And from the time that we started to the time that we got to the board, the markets changed quite a bit. For example, the AMT bonds used to be about 20 basis points higher in yield than a regular tax exempt. Today, that market is so thin that that spread has just jumped to 200 basis points, which led to one of the reasons that we delayed the Verizon Service Authority bond issue. Investment yields are far below tax exempt yields and even farther below AMT yields. So while the debt issues, the debt process can take months as we go through the budget process and everything else, the market has been changing rapidly, and we've been having to tell our clients that you need to be prepared to do this. You need to be in a position to perhaps change the way you plan for debt issuance. And again, us being as financial advisors only, dedicate all of our time to reviewing such matters. Next slide, please. One thing, we're going to talk a little bit about the Verizon Service Authority. And what we want to demonstrate here is for us to be a good financial advisor for anybody, we have to understand the client. You can't go in and dictate to the client things without knowing what their goals are and what they've been through. And being involved with the Verizon Service Authority for a number of years, it has changed dramatically from the 90s to today. It used to be primarily a had a philosophy from the board of don't enter projects unless you were specifically asked by the participants of that project to join. The authority was reluctant to take perceived risks. Often, though, the contracts that they ended up entering into had a lot more risk than what was realized at the time, as we found out through a couple of those projects years later. And the authority primarily issued contract revenue bonds and did very little water planning, along with the rest of the state, and didn't have any formal policies for fund balance and debt policies, which led to some of the problems they had with setting rates among some of their customers. What we have now is a river authority that has three of its service areas in some of the fastest growing parts of the state and, in fact, the nation. Those areas being north of Austin, west Houston, and to a lesser degree, but still growing, southwest of Fort Worth. The authority, because it is in these situations where its customers are growing so fast, it's now got to be in a proactive situation where it tries to go out and put regional projects on the ground to meet the needs of the customers, or else the customers will have to work elsewhere for more expensive sources of water and more difficult ways to do these regional projects. The Verizon Service Authority is the natural conduit to do those things. The Verizon Service Authority is instrumental in the state water planning in all of the regions. It cuts through many regions. And it has very sophisticated debt and financial policies, which we talked about some of the ratings. Presenting these policies to the ratings, we do it proactively, has led to some rating successes here at the Crisis River Court. Next slide, please. My personal experience is that I've been the lead financial advisor with my former firm since the 1990s. I've been involved in watching the river authority transform from a rural river authority to what it is now, which is a dynamic, very well-run, well-managed water utility and river authority. This, the river authority, Brazos River Authority now takes risk, but it understands risk. You may realize that any project you're in, whether it's contract revenue or whether you're developing it, has risk. So if you're going to take the risk, you might as well have as much control over these projects and control the resources as much as you can. We have worked with your staff and the board over the years to elevate the Brazos River Authority to what it is today. Next slide, please. Just a note, these are the specific bond issues that I've been involved with and to a degree some of the other team members with the Brazos River Authority, over 20 transactions totaling over $178 million. Next slide. This is the rating history of the Brazos River Authority. The Brazos River Authority has been successful in getting these rating upgrades over time. The Brazos River Authority really was not a large debt issuer prior to 2001. Only after 2001 did it become, that it started, entered more into the debt market. And it was also at that time that some of these changes in the River Authority started taking place in terms of demands and the resources of the River Authority. When we started out with the Brazos River Authority, the first rating in 2001, it had been the first rating presentation that had been done for many years to the Brazos River Authority. If you went back and you compared what we had at the Brazos River Authority in terms of policies, presentations, planning, and compared it to the last rating presentations that we've done, you would see that there's a stark difference. The whole management philosophy, the quality of the management team that you have here, and to a degree, the team members, us included, we believe were instrumental in changing the whole philosophy and the financial structure of the Brazos River Authority. Next slide. Moving ahead, as the Brazos River Authority continues and will continue to have demands on the River Authority, on its ability and to manage regional projects and to complete large capital projects that are going to be required in the Brazos River Basin as the growth of that basin continues. We have to look ahead at what the strengths are and the weaknesses are of the Brazos River Authority and manage those strengths and weaknesses. So I've included some of them up here. As a credit strength, you have a very experienced staff that has great depth, including one person that needs to be an employee of rating agents. The board has increased its control over the revenues by converting as many contracts as it can, as soon as it can, to system rate projects, away system rate contracts, away from contracts that had set prices for very long periods of time. That revenue control is vital to the revenue of the Brazos River Authority. The BRA has a strong liquidity position, which is very important now. It has well-defined policies that were put together by your current staff to determine how much cash should be in several different funds that was all board approved. It has a well-thought-out capital plan and is a major component in the state water planning efforts within Texas. Its projects are in areas with strong economic and demographic trends, and it has the potential to convert a substantial amount of property at cost of in cash or even more liquidity. On the weakness side, the biggest weakness that we face when we talk to the rating agencies is that you have two customers that are a significant amount of your revenues, which are the two electric utilities, Luminant and Houston Lightning Power's successor. You have many contracts that still are not on the system rate, although that will correct itself over time. There are some complex legal issues that have not yet been resolved, and what we're referring to there is primarily Possum Kingdom. The capital plans will require a lot of debt. You have tremendous amount of capital plans. You're going to have to manage your debt and manage your cash very carefully to maintain your ratings while you meet the demands of your growing service area. You operate a lot of large projects, particularly some large dams, which are aging, and there is potential that those dams could require a lot of capital expenditures if, for whatever reason, it's determined that they're unsound, or in fact, we've had situations where similar dams in other parts of the country have had problems requiring large expenditures from the Brazos River Authority. And finally, the Brazos River Authority in the last few years has done a really good job of displacing itself from some very entangled legal situations that took a lot of the resources of this board and of the staff. There is one of those left, and anything that diverts yourself away from your true goal, the distraction, can be it just like anything else, it takes away from your ability to serve your customers. And hopefully that too will soon be resolved, but as it continues on at Possum Kingdom, it is a distraction from the primary goals of this board. Next slide, please. Moving ahead, you're still, this is a little bit of a summary that I just made, but you've got a lot of service areas that are going to be fast growing and have placed a lot of demands on planning and on projects for the service area. And at the same time, you've got to manage your financial position. If you've got a lot of cash, you can issue debt. Right now, that may not make a lot of sense. So you've got to manage how much of your cash you use. You're in a situation of very volatile financial markets, and there's one distraction, and hopefully fewer distractions over time. Next slide.
How much of an impact do you think the distraction of the PFAD has on our ratings? You know, we've got received an increase in ratings, but yeah, it seems to be out there.
At this point, the distraction management has been very good here. The board and the staff with Phil's leadership have taken care of these two big distractions that were also with you, which were the Williamson County raw water line as well as SWATs. Now, it was during the time that you had both of those going on and the legal actions of those that you received some of these upgrades. So I don't think right now that Possum Kingdom is currently impacting the ratings, but it clearly takes a lot of the time of the staff and the board. And I think the board and the staff are and need to continue to be vigilant that doesn't draw away from the efforts towards serving customers. And so far that hasn't happened. But it is something that needs to be considered.
But it is being brought up in the analysis by underwriters, right?
This particular one, the Possum Kingdom, I think, of the three that we've had, the Williamson County Raw Water Line and SWATs were negatives because they were potential cash outflow of the water supply system. As a matter of fact, were cash outflows. We have now defined those cash outflows. Possum Kingdom is a potential advantage because of the potential cash inflow. So I think what people are looking at with regard to that is, will you be able to capitalize on that and forego future debt and maintain some of the cash balances or, you know, lower the rates as some people would want? And you've got those choices to make. So I think that's actually in a roundabout way possible. We talked about the Brazos River Authority's cash policies and the fact that the board established and they're very clear. We can lay them out to rating agencies and insurance companies. We can point to exactly what they are. That is a strength in your rating. We also know that currently you're probably making somewhere around 1% on your investments. And if you were to sell bonds that are subject to A&T, you'd probably be far north of 6%. So it leads you to the question, could you or should you spend your cash now And if so, what for? Should you use it for projects? Should you use it to defease some of your other debt? Or should you use it to defer issuing current debt? And as you look at that, in our view, there's no question that the Brazos River Authority is going to continue to have capital expenditures in the future. You're going to continue to have to issue debt because you can't cash fund all of your projects. You've got a lot of cash on hand right now that, in our view, could be used to defer or delay debt until there is a situation where investment returns are higher and the cost of debt is lower. But at the same time, you've got to be careful and abide by the board-established policies of how much cash you should have in each pocket. And I believe that if the situation exists the way it is now, that we may even, the Brazos River Authority may even want to consider doing a temporary adjustment to that policy to allow it to dip into some of that cash for some of its capital projects and reimburse that cash out of debt when the financial markets and the investment markets are a little closer to what typically is the relationship between taxes and debt and cash investments. So anyway, that's one of the things that we think is important for all of our clients that have large capital budgets and large cash balances. Next slide. In summary, we have a great deal of experience with the Brazos River Authority. We've watched the authority transform itself into a dynamic water utility from what was basically a sleepy river authority in a rural area. We would love to be your financial advisor moving ahead. It would be a great honor to us if you meet personally, and we're glad to answer any questions that you have.
Any questions from anybody? Appear to be any at this time. I want to thank you very much for coming. We appreciate your presentation.
Thank you.
And again, thanks.
Great. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do you believe you're going to lunch? I didn't see you.